15 on 1070 WIBC. Tom Gashinelli, and we're here in our studios on the Circle, and Donald is in front of the Dry Iron Rainbow Garages. Good afternoon, Donald.
Hello, David.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
Heck of a crowd out there today for Carb Day, wasn't there?
I think that's the largest crowd I've seen at the track, except on race day, for quite a few years.
Yeah. Very nice. Even with threatening weather, we had a lot of folks on there.
It was a huge crowd.
Yeah. Well, let's get to the phones. We got some people hanging on from Tippecanoe County up in Lafayette, Indiana there. It's Jim. You're up with Donald Davidson, Jim.
Hey, Donald.
Yes, sir.
Wasn't it about 79 or 78 or so when they had to add extra people to the field because there was some controversy over, they thought somebody might be putting some exhaust, washers in their exhaust pipe to gain more power?
1979.
Yes. And what exactly was the controversy on that? We were talking about that the other night, and I couldn't remember the details.
Okay, here's what happened. The exhaust pipe had to be a certain measurement across, and all of the pipes were bigger than they needed to be, and somebody figured out that if you could weld a washer into the exhaust pipe, that the opening in the washer would make the size of the hole in the exhaust legal. And so by having the washer in there, it acted like a flange and allowed pressure to build up. And it was an effort to override the pop-off valve.
Uh-huh.
And the controversy was that several people did that. It was not illegal, but just somebody figured it out. And it ended up that people that had not done and just ran straight pipes got bumped. And so they felt that there was two sets of regulations going on. Now, there was one fellow that actually welded the whole thing shut to override it, and his run was thrown out completely. But after quite a bit of controversy and back and forth, they decided that they would allow 11 cars to make another attempt. 8 did. One of the 11 that could not was John Mailers, who had used most of the cars on his car that got bumped in order to build another one, Bill Finley. In order to get back into the race, so they basically didn't have two complete race cars. And then they had a qualification on the morning of the drivers' meeting, day before the race, and what you had to do, where the 8 cars went out, and they had to beat Roger McCluskey's speed, which I think was 183.803. If you could exceed that, you made it, and if not, you didn't. 30-minute practice session, line them up. They had to go one at a time in the order. If you had an engine problem, too bad. And the first two off the line, George Snyder and Billy Vukovich, both exceeded the limit, and then everybody else behind had a problem. Bill Alsop crashed. A couple of other people had mechanical problems. Others went the distance but were too slow, and so those two were added onto the back of the field.
Wasn't there a little bit of controversy because they wanted the drivers in the field to agree to it or something like that? And there was one driver that they kind of mysteriously disappeared.
Well, there was actually two that objected, but they got there were two that wouldn't sign, and then they got overruled.
There you go. Jim, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Let's continue on here. We'll stay up in Lafayette, Indiana, and we'll speak with Steve from Lafayette. Steve, you're up with Donald.
Hey, Donald, how are you today?
Fine, sir.
I'm going to get off the line, but I'm going to ask one question. Where are the three Whittington brothers today?
I have no idea. Not here.
Yeah. Thankfully, they're not here, Steve.
No idea. And they made the race, what, one time all three of them did?
Yes, all three made the race once. Don and Bill were here in 80, 81, and 82, and 83. Not 84, because apparently, as Lou Palmer said, there was probably a cash flow problem. And then they were back in 85. But in 82, all three of them were in the race.
There you go. Steve, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. We'll take more of your calls here on the Talk of Gasoline Alley right after this. 6:19. Let's head up to the news center and join a very busy 6:25 on 1070 WIBC. Donald Davidson, Dave Wilson back here with the Talk of Gasoline Alley. And, Donald, we just got a phone call. We'll tell you that the caller said that all three of the Whittingtons are living down in Florida.
Well, I knew that, but I wasn't going to say.
Yeah,
I knew two of them were anyway.
Yeah. And apparently Don and Bill are running a jet airplane company, and Dale is retired from the company. So
really,
there you have it, according to our caller there. So
and he's just a kid.
Yeah,
he would be. Well, wait a minute though. He would be 42. No, he'd be 44. He was 22 in 1982.
Oh, for crying
out
loud!
So the kid is 44.
Yeah.
I can't believe that.
Yeah,
I didn't know where he was. There were 18 months between Don and Bill, and then Dale was quite a bit younger than them. I think he was probably about another 8 or 9 years younger.
Yeah. They're all down in Florida.
Yeah.
There you have it. Let's get back to the phones, and Don, you're up with Donald Davidson on the Talk of Gasoline Alley.
Good afternoon, guys.
Hi.
Listen, I was just thinking while I was listening to you, when I was a kid, and I want to say it was in 1973, because it was the year of all the deaths, all the fatalities, there was a driver that I had met, like at a social function, Indian Guide meeting or something, that we got an autograph from. I think his name was Mike Malloy.
Jim Malloy.
And, okay, and that's all I knew about him. He was killed, like, I think, in a crash during practice the Sunday of, we were on our way to church and heard it on the radio, but I didn't know anything else about him. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about him.
I could. 1972 was the year, and he had been in the previous 400 or 500s. He was from Denver originally, and his background, where he really came to prominence, was a group called CAMRA, Canadian American Modified Racing Association, which produced such stars as Billy Foster, Art Pollard, Dick Simon, a bunch of other, Eldon Rasmussen, a bunch of other people. Anyway, he had 4 starts at Indianapolis, and 1968 was his rookie year, and he drove one of the first of the 2 or 3 V8 Ford turbocharged engines, and in fact, I think he lasted the longest of any of them. Anyway, he finished 22nd. He didn't finish the race, and then he was 11th in 69. In 70, he qualified for the outside of the third row and had a suspension break as they were coming around for the start. He came off the fourth turn, and he spun from the outside of row 3 right across in front of everybody, and there was no contact by anyone. And, in fact, they red-flagged the race and then restarted about 10 minutes later, and he was out to finish 33rd. In 71, he looked like he was going to miss it for MVS, and then Dan Gurney picked him up at the last minute to Bobby Unser, and he ended up finishing 4th. And in 72, he was going for the pole with a 72 Eagle owned by Gerhardt, Thermo King special. And on the second day, he had an accident. About the time that he had the crash, this had nothing to do with it, I don't want to infer that, but we were watching a tornado over on the east side of town was hitting about the time that Malloy had the accident. And he hit hard, never regained consciousness, and he passed away on the Thursday. In May of 72. Mm. Nice guy. Came to my house once.
Yeah. Don, thank you for your call. Donald, hang on. We'll be right back. 628. Lines are available. 239-1071, 800-571-WIBC. If you have a question of a historic nature for Donald about the Speedway or the 500, we'll come back with the Talk of Gasoline Alley right after news. Hi, Joe. Thanks a bunch. 634 here on the Talk of Gasoline Alley, the Dave Wilson Show. The Coach's Show. Rick Carlisle coming up here at the top of the hour. Let's get back to the phones. Linda Conti, I do believe you're up with Donald Davidson. Linda?
Well, hi, guys. Nice talking with you. I've lost my voice from the weekend.
Yeah.
Linda Conti, wait a minute. This isn't fair. Wait a minute.
You know what? Because here's the deal, Donald. I wanted to ask you this question all weekend long, and we were so darn busy with that Tony Stewart deal, we never had any downtime. And you know what I'm calling you about? I want to know more about Shorty Catlin.
Oh, yes, okay.
My uncle was a mechanic for him the year he was killed at the Speedway, 1946 or 47.
Seven.
And I really don't know much about him except that he did have some good finishes. I don't know what his background is or where he was from, and I sure would like to learn more.
Okay, well, he was born in Paris, Illinois, and he actually was listed out of Detroit for a lot of his adult life, and his tenure at the Speedway was 1928 through 1947.
That's pretty good tenure.
Yeah. Well, of course, there's the war years in there, but anyway, in 28, he was in a car that didn't make a qualifying attempt, but he did drive relief in the race, which you could do in those days. You could drive relief without having previously been a qualifier, and his best finish was second in 1930. He wasn't there in 29. He was on the front row and finished second in 1930 with a Miller, which was revolutionary. It was called a Miller Marine, and the Miller had always been a straight eight. This was a Miller that was built for boat racing, and it was a four-cylinder. And this is the engine that became the Offenhauser. And so he finished second with a driver named Herman Schurch as his relief driver from California. And The next best finish that he had was 1935, because I don't think we've got time to do... Oh, what the heck? Let's just do the whole thing. In 1938, he co-drove Henry Collard's Elgin Piston Pin Special for 13th, with Doc Shattuck also co-driving. In 29, he wasn't entered. 30, the car was variously called the Miller Street... The Miller's... let's see. Well, the Miller Schofield Special... And the Miller High Speed Special was what it was named prior to that. But it ran as the Miller Schofield Special, finished second with Herman Schurz as a relief driver. In 31, it was the Harry A. Miller Special. He dropped out finishing 27th. 32, he couldn't drive because he'd been injured in a dirt track accident. And his car was the Lionhead Special, was driven by Howdy Wilcox II, who was not related to the 1919 winner. And finished second in his only start, and Shorty Kemp, and that was actually the owner of that car. Then in 33, he drove the Sullivan and O'Brien Special, and this coincided with Sullivan and O'Brien Motor Sales starting, which is the forerunner of the O'Brien business today. Tom O'Brien is descended from the O'Brien of Sullivan and O'Brien. And anyway, so in 1933, he dropped out and finished 34th. He co-drove Chet Miller's Mara Hudson Special, and that dropped out for 20th. In 34, it was the Miller Sullivan and O'Brien Special, dropped out for 20th with Billy Wynn co-driving. And then 1936, finished 6th with the Sullivan and O'Brien Special with Billy Wynn co-driving. Then 1936 was the, good heavens, hang on, wait a minute. Well, I got myself in a jam here. 1937 was the Bosio Fair Special with Rex Mays co-driving for 17th. 38 was the Cam Special, K-A-M-M-S, which was a beer, and that finished 33rd. Then 39, it was the Auto Service Special, and that finished 32nd. That was a local outfit, by the way, where you could get your car repaired. Sponsors, it was a lot easier to get sponsors in those days. 40 was the Thurber Special. He qualified but couldn't start, and Babe Stapp drove the car, and he was not in a condition to drive on race morning, and that's all I'm going to say. And then in 41, he missed it with the Sampson Special. Then we had the Warriors. 46, it was the 8-3 Special owned by the Hughes Brothers of Denver, finished 28th. And then in... 1947, it was the Auto Shipper Special. He started fifth, but the engine wouldn't fire. And when he joined the field, they took off, and they were probably up about turn three when he finally got fired up. They pushed him off, and so when the race started, because they only did one lap in those days, they push him off, and then first time around was the start. And so the field goes by, and then it was probably about 30 seconds before he came by at considerable speed. He was able to come up through the field a little bit, and then he got involved in an accident on the 40th lap, hit the wall, and was fatally injured. Now, I mentioned that he was born in Paris, Illinois, and that he lived in Detroit. Well, the later years of his life, he lived in Indianapolis, and he had a bar down on 16th Street. It was 16th and Montcalm, and he lived just up the road from there. He had had a place on Washington for a short time, Washington Street, and then he moved up, and it was called, I think it was called Shorty's Speedway Tavern, and he had it for about a year. It was still the Speedway Tavern for many, many years thereafter. When the front of the building changed a few years ago, but I'd say that probably a dozen years ago, it still had the original sign, but
wow.
Yeah, he was a popular little guy. Briefly appears in The Crowd Roars, and I could tell you more, but we've run over the time here a little bit.
Thanks, Linda.
Thanks, Donald. You're a treasure.
Thanks, Linda.
That's Linda Conti. We'll come back, take more calls of historic nature with Donald Davison, talk of Gasoline Alley right after this. 647. Talk of Gasoline Alley, Donald Davison. Back at the Speedway in front of the Dry and Rainbow Garage, along with Scott Johnston, Matt Hiblin back here with Dave Wilson in our studios. Let's get back to the phones, and up in Carmel is Jim. You're on WIBC with Don Davidson, Jim.
Hey, Dave. Hey, Donald. How are you guys?
Fine, sir.
Hey, I got a quick question for you. This year there was some concern that there were only going to be maybe 32 or 31 cars in the field, ended up getting a full field.
Yep.
Is there a minimum qualifying speed? I mean, could we have guys that are running out there at 215, 220, and then suddenly somebody pulls a car out of nowhere and runs 140, could they qualify and be number 33?
Okay, this year they did not set a minimum speed, but they were told that all attempts would expect to be serious attempts. And so, no, you couldn't do that.
And is there any precedent in the past for somebody doing something like that in the past?
Well, they for many, many, many years, they had a minimum speed. In fact, the last time that there were less than 33 was 1947, when there were 30. And on the final, they had an additional qualifying session, but which is a long story. But the bottom line is that in those days, the minimum speed was 115 miles an hour, which they would up it every now and again. There would, you know, they'd go a few years and they'd up it another 5 miles an hour as the speeds climb. But anyway, it happened to be 115 miles an hour in 1947. And there were two cars that completed four lap runs that were below 115, and they excluded them. So they only started 30. For many years, there was 135 mile an hour minimum when the speeds were actually quite a bit faster than that. So there have been years when they've dropped it, years when they did have one. And this year, the decision was that they wouldn't set a hard speed, but that it, they would expect it to be a reasonable attempt so that, no, you couldn't go out and do 190 or 140 or whatever it is.
There you go. Jim, thanks for your call. We do appreciate it. 649. We'll come right back. More with Donald Davidson and talk at Gasoline Alley. Let's head it back up to the news center with Steve Simpson. Steve.
All right, guys, updating.
657, the Coach Carlisle show coming up here in a matter of moments. Let's go back to the Speedway, though, to talk at Gasoline Alley with Donald Davidson. Donald?
Yeah, I spaced, and I wanted to get in right away because the moment we went off to take the commercial before last, or the break before last, Shorty Cantlin, I spaced on 1936. He finished 14th with the Hamilton and Harris special, and he was running 6th when he ran out of fuel with 6 laps to go. The limit then was 37.5 gallons for 500 miles, and there was about 6 cars dropped out of the top 10 in the final 10 laps running out of fuel. I guess that's all we have time, and we're running out of fuel.
There you go. We'll be back tomorrow night. Thanks, Donald. We appreciate it. You can call Donald, too, if you want to on this Network Indiana show at 1-800-603-6453. 1-800-603-6453. Carlisle's up next. We'll see everybody back here at 4 o'clock tomorrow.